Det er ikke mange fiaskoer, den italienske operakomponist Giacomo Puccini har på sit CV. Men der er et par enkelte, ja, vi kan måske kalde det undtagelser, som bekræfter hovedreglen, nemlig den hovedregel, at han var og er en af operahistoriens allermest betydningsfulde og nok også bedste komponister. Men en af undtagelserne, det er faktisk Madama Butterfly, som uagtet at det i dag er en af de mest elskede af Puccinis operaer, og faktisk her i februar måned kan opleves på Den Kongelige Opera, ja, så er det en af de forestillinger, som er blevet taget aller dårligst imod af publikum. Tilbage den 17. februar 1904, altså for næsten præcis 120 år siden, ja, der var premieren nærmest fatal. Puccini var grædefærdig og skrev hjem til sin familie om, hvordan publikum overhovedet ikke havde modtaget musikken. Men som den forkæmper for operaen han var, så lå han sig ikke slå ud, men skrev den om. Skrev flere arier til, og ja, en hel akt mere blev det også til. Og få år efter, i 1906, jamen der var den tredje version klar, og premieren på Metropolitan, der i øvrigt også fandt sted i februar året efter, nemlig 11. februar 1907, den blev så den fantastiske succes, som Madama Butterfly har været lige siden. Puccini foretog nogle enkelte justeringer, og den indspilning, som vi lytter til her, og som man normalt opfører rundt omkring på verdens operascener i dag, det er den femte og endelige, og det er lidt af et mesterværk. Derfor er det selvfølgelig også en forestilling, et værk, en opera, som vi her i Kammertonen ikke kan komme udenom. Og da slet ikke, når man faktisk kan gå ind og høre musikken i København på Den Kongelige Opera her den, jeg tror det er den 25. februar, at premieren finder sted. Operaen åbner, som vi hører her, med en fuga. En vild flugt af strygere, som kæmper derudad og som straks bliver suppleret af det øvrige orkester. Det er faktisk en overture, og på den måde skiller Madame Butterfly sig noget ud, for det er nemlig den eneste af Puccinis operaer, som har sådan en overture-agtig indledning. Så lad os lytte lidt til det. Sei mi par cosmopolita che guardi se non giunge ancor la sposa tutto è pronto ogni cosa gran perla di senzale l'ufficiale del registro, i parenti, il vostro console, la fidanzata, qui si firma l'atto e il matrimonio è fatto. E son molti parenti, ma sfocerà la nonna Mozio. Ja, nogen sådan overtyre i mozartsk eller rossinisk forstand er der selvfølgelig ikke tale om. For der går ikke lang tid, før de vilde violiner og ja, hele fugatemaet er blevet flettet sammen med selve operaen. Vi har fået to af hovedkaraktererne på scenen, nemlig Benjamin Franklin Pinkerton og Sharpless. Det er henholdsvis vores super skurk og super elsker Pinkerton, det kommer vi tilbage til, og så den amerikanske konsul i Nagasaki. Sharpless. Det er de to personer, der åbner operaen, som altså ved den opvågne lytter nu har bemærket, foregår i Japan. Japan, som kun er et af de lande, Puccini han var nysgerrig på. Vi kender alle sammen Pigen fra det vilde vesten, som foregår i USA, i staterne. Og naturligvis Puccinis sidste opera, Turandot, som foregår i det sagaomspundne Kina. Madame Butterfly, som også navnet måske hentyder til, foregår i Japan. Og Puccini brugte meget tid på at studere de japanske toner, melodier osv., inden han gav sig ud i at skrive den her opera, ligesom han gjorde med de kinesiske folketoner, da han skrev Turandot, og ligesom man helt åbenlyst også kan høre amerikanske melodistumper og harmoniseringer i La Fanciulla del Vest. Men vi befinder os altså i Japan, og operaen foregår i sin egen tid, det vil sige i 1904, hvor den også havde sin første premiere, og vi møder altså her den amerikanske søofficer Pinkerton. Han har lejet et hus i Nagasaki og har en drøftelse her med sin amerikanske ven, som de taler om lidt delikat affære. For Pinkerton, udover at være søofficer, der har vi det hæderlige og ordentlige, tror jeg. Han har lavet en aftale med Sharpless. Han vil nemlig gerne giftes. Men det skal helst være sådan lidt, ja, i dag vil man nok kalde det til venstre hånd. De japanske ægteskabslove, de er nemlig temmelig uklare. Og derfor er det sådan set med den åbne intention, Pinkerton gifter sig, at han vil hurtigt bort derfra. Sharpless, som fremstår som en levemand, men også lidt af en charlatan, relativt samvittighedsløs, han har allerede indgået aftalen, og det er med den japanske 15-årige pige, Chocho-san, som er det øvrigt japanske ord for netop sommerfugl, butterfly. Første akt handler altså om, at de to, de møder hinanden. Chocho-san, Butterfly, forelsker sig selvfølgelig dybt i Pinkerton, og de har en vidunderlig, må man gå ud fra, nat sammen. Og det kommer der sandelig også et barn ud af. Lige den del ved Pinkerton imidlertid ikke noget om. For snart efter, han har bekræftet ægteskabet, ja, så rejser han sådan set hjem til USA. Men det sker godt nok med et løfte til Chocho-san om, at han skal nok vende tilbage. Og det gør han også, nemlig i tredje akt. Men dette løfte om, at nok skulle vende tilbage, det er en af de store arier, som vi får i første akt. Un baldi, en skønne dag, som han siger til Butterfly, og som hun går og tror på og drømmer om igennem hele anden akt og frem mod hans tilbagevenden i tredje akt. Og den arie skal vi naturligvis lige høre. Og vi hører her indspilningen med Herbert von Karajan som dirigent, og det er Marella Freni, der er Chocho-san Butterfly.
Uscito dalla folla cittadina sarà, e chi sarà, e come sarà giunto, e chi dirà, chi dirà, chi amerà Pater Floyd'o la lontana. Io senza dar risposta me ne starò nascosta.
Ja, vi hørte her med Mahela Freni synge Un bel di vedremo fra første akt af Madame Butterfly, hvor den kun 15-årige troskyldige og uskyldige Butterfly står drømmende og venter på, at hendes elskede mand, Benjamin Franklin Pinkerton, må vende tilbage. Tilbage til den overraskelse, som hun har til ham, nemlig at hun har født ham en dreng. Det ved han ingenting om, og det skal vi vende tilbage til, hvordan det ender. Det er en af de mest storladende, men også rørende fortællinger, som Puccini har sat musik til her, og som vi hører i arien her, jamen så er det et forsøg på at blande de japanske toner sådan lidt. Pentaton, altså den her femtoneskala, vi kender fra den asiatiske musik, med den traditionelle italienske operaklang. Og både det, hvordan man forener to så forskellige klange, men også om hele forestillingen og hvordan det er at arbejde med Puccinis musik, det havde jeg her tidligere på ugen en samtale med den italienske første gæstedirigent på Det Kongelige Kapel, Paolo Carignani, om. Og jeg synes, vi skal nu lytte lidt til samtalen her med Carignani, hvor vi kommer både ind på Puccinis musik, men også den opsætning, som man altså kan opleve på Den Kongelige Opera i København her om få uger, og ikke mindst, om man overhovedet i dag kan tillade sig at opføre en forestilling om ældre amerikanere, der gør 15-årige japanske piger gravide. Paolo Carignani, thank you so much for inviting me into your dressing room here with such wonderful people in the walls, all the previous guest conductors. You're working with Madama Butterfly. How is that, as an Italian, as a conductor, to work with Puccini's Butterfly?
So, good morning, everybody, and welcome in the stage room of the Opera House with such wonderful colleagues like Bruno Walter, Celi Bidache, Georg Scholti, Simon Rettel, Petrenko, Barenboim, you know, very big tradition of this orchestra, yes. The oldest orchestra in the world, you know. What about Puccini? Puccini, you know, I was born in a family where my mother had a particular approach with Puccini. She loved very much the music of Puccini, so I was listening this music when I was already 10. And always wondering about the music of Puccini is coming directly, without intellectual approach, directly to something inside you. This music is really touching. Suddenly you have to cry, or you are very, you know, just a moment before you start to cry, because this music is touching some taste in my body. And so I was quite scared about that, because how is the power of this music? It can arrive and you cannot protect yourself. And this was my first approach of Puccini. Then I studied music and I developed a career as a conductor, and I conducted 20th century composer like Lulu Alban Berg, Schoenberg. So I try to see this Puccini composer not like a passion, sentimental way, but in another way, not only from here, but from my head, analysis and very rational way, not just to be touched, because, and this is probably the best way to protect yourself from this the power of the music of Puccini.
You have the score here from the first act. The piano score, I think it is.
No, this is a part of the first violin. It's exactly because I want to see what the musician of the orchestra put it in the parts. Correction, notes, and the orchestra played many times this opera in the past. So there are everything that until now the conductor asked to the orchestra. And for me, it's always interesting to see.
So this is the notes that the first violin holds before him.
Exactly. Here is the score where I can have everything together.
Wow, that's a huge.
It's a big one.
So when you look through this score, where is this emotional touch of Puccini? What is it that he can do that you don't find maybe in Verdi or Mascagni or other of the contemporary Italians?
If you want to be touched, you don't have to look at the score. Just stay unprotected, and the music is coming and touching yourself. The moment you start to open the score, you start to analyze like an architect with a building. So you have the big building. One room is there, another room is there. There is the kitchen here. So you start, you see, to analyze everything. He has three bars, you have four bars, three bars, you know, and you protect yourself.
From what? From getting too emotional?
From getting too emotional. Because if you conduct, you are not so lucky to be emotional. You have to produce emotion. So you need to step a bit away from that. And especially with musician as well, of course, you have to give control and everybody safe, you know, to the singer. So I must have, an approach mm-hmm. a bit distance about that. But of course, for the audience, not. They're not using the score and not analyzing, except some critics maybe has to analyze that. But the audience, you know, sit there and enjoy what is happening there.
And we can all enjoy soon, because you have a premiere coming up on Madama Butterfly. And will that be your first production of Puccini's Butterfly, or have you done this before?
I've done before not so many times, like Tosca, for example. I did in Vienna, and I did it was my debut, and I did in Munich. It was the second time I did it. After that, it was 2011, so many years ago already. It's not the piece I conducted at most. I did many times Tosca, many times Bohème, of course, Turandot. So Butterfly is still fresh for me.
And how does Butterfly, would you say, differ from Tosca, Bohème, Manon Lescaut, and Turandot is more evident, I think, even though it takes place in geographically almost the same place. But musically speaking, what makes Butterfly different from the other operas around the beginning of the century?
It started from the necessity of Puccini to discover a new language. And he was really attracted from this Oriental aspect. As the first time, he made a big research about the music of Japan, melodies of Japan, in different way. He was very, very good friend of the ambassador of Japan in Italy, mm-hmm. and asked to have all the melodies possible to have. So he made some arrangement of his melody with a language that he used already in Bohème, for example. Oh, okay. It's the first opera where we can have something outside the usual way of Puccini. After that is coming, of course, other necessity. It was China with Turandot. It was Fanciulla del West mm-hmm. with an American melody. So it's interesting he developed this modernity to with a folk aspect, tune. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. And when you listen to it, when you hear the Japanese folk tunes, what is that pentaton or how are they built into the traditional European sound?
It is a pentaton way, but with our harmony. But for example, he's finishing the opera not with a normal chords that is maggiore, minor, or major. Mm-hmm. It is finishing the opera with, we say in Italy, terza e sesta. So it's not a normal chord to finish the opera. It's a chord that maybe there is something after that.
So it opens up.
Exactly. Something, what is happening now? Because sometimes it's interesting to see. We see an history, even in the drama, and we are sometimes interested what is happening after that, when the end is coming.
Yeah. Yes, that's it's, well, sometimes you don't want to know, like in Aida, what will but Puccini struggled with Madama Butterfly. As I understand, he rewrote again and again. You're working, I think, with the final fifth yes. edition that you traditionally do. But do you ever look back and say, what are the corrections? What was it that he wanted to redo after the original premiere?
He gave in the beginning more space in small character. For example, the relatives of Butterfly. Mm-hmm. There was one edition where one uncle of Butterfly has an aria, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, small parts, and maybe was too much. You know, too confusing, and not so essential. What I have to say that is not perfect, like Tosca, for example, or Bohème. The duet of the first act, the love duet of the first act, and the duet of Suzuki and Butterfly is quite a bit long, you know, compared with the structure of a piece. Yeah. So yeah. we can see that he was struggling about the structure of a piece. And of course, in Teatro alla Scala was not a success at all.
No.
Not a success at all. He needed to put an aria for the tenor, because no tenor wanted to see sing Pinkerton, because I don't have an aria to sing. So he put the new aria.
Addio Fiordotti Asil.
For the tenor, you know, because.
So that's new.
You have to think that singers wanted to have something to sing, if not, they didn't accept to be.
So it was not only the music, it was also about the ambience surrounding the opera that then ended up in this wonderful score. It's funny that you mentioned the length of the love duet from the end of first act, because I think it's something of the most touching in opera history, even though it takes, what, 10 minutes?
Probably a bit longer, because start with a duet and then you have a feeling, okay, it's finished. No, it's continuing again. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say, of course, that it's too long, but in the structure, you know, if you analyze the structure from a conductor has to think from the first note until the last note, have to be able to see the whole structure. I think that take a lot of space. So we need a good director mm-hmm. creating the right dimension for that space.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
aggrenita ti serro palpitante, sei mia.
Og her hørte vi netop den kærlighedsduet, som afslutter første akt af Madama Butterfly, og som Paolo Carignani og jeg talte om, inden vi satte musikken på. Vi hørte den i en indspilning med Placido Domingo og Leontine Price. Og det er netop her, at operans, hvad kan man sige, følelsesmæssige højdepunkt, det er at finde. Det afrunder første akt, det er her, hvor kærligheden råder, hvor Chuchu-san, Butterfly, har fået sin elskede, og hvor man i musikken i hvert fald ikke er i tvivl om, at Pinkerton, jamen han mener det 100%. Det gør han dog ikke. For Når tæppet går, og anden akt begynder, jamen så er der gået 3 år. Og Butterfly, hun venter stadigvæk på, at hendes Pinkerton, han skal vende tilbage. Hun havde håbet, at det ville vare længere, og trøster sig alligevel med Suzuki, sin tjener, som hun kan diskutere både, hvad der skal ske, når Pinkerton vender tilbage, men også sådan få dagligdagen til, og dagligdagen til at glide, ikke mindst med sin lille søn. Og her er vi jo inde på et af de dilemmaer om, hvad man kan i moderne opera, i moderne kunst. Kan man tillade sig at fremstille Pinkerton som en helt, som den store romantiker, den store forfører i første akt, når han i virkeligheden viser sig at være lidt af en schuft, når vi nærmer os anden og ikke mindst tredje akt. Alt det, og hvordan man forener den klassiske musik, der er skrevet for 120 år siden, med de stemninger og strømninger, der præger vores moderne tilværelse, det fik jeg også lejlighed til at tale lidt med Paolo Carignani om. And well, speaking about the production that we can soon see here in the Royal Opera, I can't help thinking about that there are some of the themes in Butterfly that are not really fitting for today. We have an American officer coming to Japan, marrying a 15-year-old girl with not the best intentions. How can you make art in a modern world without offending somebody with such a topic?
But I think the life is constantly offending someone today, you know. These sort of things are happening now as mm-hmm. well, mm-hmm. you know. And one thing the way of Oriental people, especially in Japan, the education of these people compared with our education, we are two completely different worlds. Mm-hmm. I've been in Tokyo many times, and I'm living in Switzerland as well. And everybody says Switzerland is clean, but probably people have never been in Tokyo. It's a huge city, completely clean. There is a respect for the other people you cannot imagine here in Europe, there. If you go to the toilet, it's absolutely clean. Go to the toilet in a cafe here or in a restaurant, you know? And so could you imagine these people that believe everything and they are so polite and are coming this modern, this other country, very prepotent and arrogant and using these people, you know? Mm-hmm. I think it's happening today, something like that. Not at this level, but this violence, I think is very, very at the time.
So the point, even maybe it has to be put in some other context, is still relevant. How aware do you think Puccini was about this storytelling? You are Maestro Carignani, born not so far from where Puccini was born. Are you from Milan?
Milan,
and he's from Lucca, I
from
think.
Lucca, yes.
So it's not too distant.
And my grandfather is from Lucca.
Ah, really? So you maybe have a relation even
probably,
composer. But how aware are you as a conductor, as a musician, about what went on in Puccini's head back 120 years ago? Or do you only focus on now and what we need to do now? Is there any connection back to what Puccini thought, not only music-wise, but also in the context of the story and the characters and so on?
You know, Puccini has seen a Madama Butterfly in a Schauspielhaus. Mm-hmm. And he was so touched about the history of the.
So he didn't invent the history. He saw it somewhere
built
on
it. He saw in the Schauspiel, how mm-hmm. you say Schauspiel, I think. And he saw the history, and he was so touched about that, and he wanted to do musical.
So he was inspired.
Exactly.
He
saw the history on the stage. You know.
And he never went to Japan, I think, but talked to the ambassador and got the
ambassador
got
in San Francisco and got the music. Visited Japan before.
So about the production today, what is the thing that when the audience will sit down there should be especially aware of? What are you most proud of in this production that will stand out, you think?
I haven't seen until now the production on the stage because I don't know really what is happening. Let's say we start next week.
Ah, okay. So yeah, with piano rehearsals.
We have a piano rehearsal in the room now, so I don't have any idea what is really. But so next week we will be on the stage, so I can say, for me it's important, you know, as a conductor, that the singers have a position on the stage where they are able to sing at the best of them, because we are doing opera. I think I spent 10 years in Germany when I was musical director in Frankfurt, and was Regie Theater at the time, and insisted that it's music theater, it's not just Regie Theater. So music have to come. Trust the music if you want to make a good staging, and not just put the singer, I don't know, far away or there, where is difficult for them to sing or to come through to the orchestra, because don't forget that orchestration of Puccini, you can see in this book,
it's quite complex. It's not like Handel or Mozart or something.
Everybody sometimes playing, you know, and so you need strong voices. And even if you have a strong voice, but it's put at the end of a stage, it's not coming through to the orchestra.
No. So what is the, when you work as a conductor, you work, of course, you have the full orchestra in front of you, but how do you manage to both take the orchestra into consideration, but also the singers and a choir? I mean, it's quite a lot of people here. It's 200 people maybe that you have to work as one. How do you do that as a conductor?
You know, breath together. If we breath together, we go together. Mm-hmm. It's very simple.
It's all about breathing.
It's about breathing.
Wonderful, wonderful. I would also like to get to know you a little bit, or rather the listeners would be interested in learning Carlo Carniani, the first guest conductor here among so many very, very famous former guest conductors, as you mentioned in the beginning, Barenboim, Bernstein, Kleiber, and also some Danes and other Scandinavians. Who is Paolo Carniani conducting the Danish Royal Symphony? What is your character that makes you different from Bernstein and Barenboim and all these people now looking at us?
Oh, it's difficult for me to compare to these people, of course.
You don't have to be humble.
I don't have to think about that. If not, I'm getting scared of that. What can I say? I conducted here my first time in 2011. Then I came back in 2015 with Vespri Siciliani of Verdi. Mm-hmm. And the connection and the relation with the orchestra was immediately, we have immediately a good chemistry together. So I talked with my agent and to give the priority to come to Copenhagen compared to other places. Mm-hmm. Not a question of money, just a question of good chemistry and good music we can play together. So I'm very proud for this relation that I have with the orchestra and with such a wonderful musician in this wonderful city. You can see my
it's a beautiful view from here.
Room. You have a view of Copenhagen. It's one of the most beautiful city in Absolutely. The world, and where is I'm very happy to live, to spend many time here, and our final project will be Tristan und Isolde. Mm-hmm. Is my next production after that, and I hope that the feeling we are doing together will stay for a long time in our memory as well.
Well, I think on behalf of the audience that it's a shared feeling that we really much, very much enjoy your productions. You made Aida.
I made Aida.
That you can also hear on podcast here in Kammerton. Now it's then Madame Butterfly, and then Tristan.
Tristan,
which is quite different from Puccini and Verdi.
Now exactly this one. Ascipo.
By Prokofiev. It's not ballet. Rossini. Yes.
Because I was thinking, if I'm principal guest conductor of here, I have to do not just opera and concert. Even the ballet, you know, is a big important part of a production in the opera house. Mm-hmm. So I think the principal conductor and musical director have to be involved, mm-hmm. even in the ballet production.
How much does it mean for you to be Italian, Northern Italian? Milan is, La Scala is probably one of the big five scenes in opera in the world. Do you think that there is something particular having the Italian heritage in you, or is it just music as everything?
It's difficult to say. Milan is the most European city in Italy, probably. You know, Milan is completely different from Rome. And but I spent a lot of time, my time in Germany, because I was 10 years musical director in Frankfurt. I worked a lot in Munich, in Hamburg, and so I'm feeling European, Mittel-European. You know, is my feeling. I'm speaking German. It's my second language. I have to say German, and. I'm feeling very well in the German repertoire as well. And but
hence Tristan and Isolde.
Exactly, when Tristan and Isolde that I did 20 years ago in Frankfurt. For that reason, I don't have to think to be Italian, because Italian character is coming automatically. Mm-hmm. The way I move, the way I speak, probably. And it's important not to be too much, you know. Don't put sugar on the honey.
Very good. That's a wonderful expression. When you prepare Butterfly or Tristan or something, would you ever listen to other productions? Going back to Bernstein and others, they have probably all conducted these masterpieces. Would you sit down with a cup of coffee in the sofa and then listen to, while reading the score, how other people do it? Or do you remain unspoiled, so to speak?
Absolutely, yes, I'm doing that. I try to analyze my score, without, that I don't want to have some suggestion. But after that, I'm really curious to hear what other colleagues did before me. Mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. It's interesting to compare, Toscanini did that. Furtwängler did that. You know, it's a sort of school that from these people that unfortunately we don't have anymore in our life. And you can just learn from that. Mm-hmm.
So it's building on experience from the previous maestros.
Tradition is the most important things. You know, we have an history. And we don't have to forget it.
Paolo Cagnani, it's been a privilege to listen to you. And I want to thank you for adding on to this tradition that hopefully will live ever on. So thank you so much for inviting me and for answering.
Thank you very much.
Det her den store tenorarie, som Paolo Carignani fortalte om, også er skrevet først i den senere version af Madame Butterfly, simpelthen fordi tenoren insisterede på at have en arie, hvor han kunne brillere. Men altså, adio Fiorita Sille, farvel til mit asyl her i Japan, synger Pinkerton, da han forstår, at han må forlade Butterfly, jo ikke bare forlade hende, men også forlade hende i en tilstand, hvor hele hendes tilværelse ligger i ruiner. Sagen er nemlig, at han er vendt tilbage til Japan, til Butterfly, med sin nye kone, sin nye amerikanske kone i tredje akt, hvor han egentlig har til hensigt at fortælle Butterfly, hvordan landet ligger. Men da han finder ud af, at han har en lille søn, da han finder ud af, at Butterfly har gået kun og ventet på, at han skulle komme tilbage, jamen så bliver han grebet af anger og sorg, og kan ikke se sig selv i at skulle konfrontere Butterfly. Han vil have drengen med til USA, hvor hans nye kone Kate har indvilliget i at opdrage ham som amerikaner, der er egen. Og der siger Butterfly så til Sharpless, der er den her evige forbindelsesofficer imellem parterne, at hun accepterer at overgive sin søn, men hun kræver at gøre det direkte over for Pinkerton. Og det er nok en af de allermest rørende afskedsscener overhovedet. Scenen her, der slutter tredje akt, som vi skal høre om lidt, hvor Butterfly siger farvel, ikke bare til sin søn, men ender med også at tage livet af sig, at tage afsked med livet. For efter hun har bundet et lille bånd om øjnene på sin søn, givet ham det amerikanske flag i hånden og skubber ham hen i retning af hans far, ja, så går hun om bag et papirforhæng med den kniv, som hun fik af sin far, og slår sig selv ihjel. Det er en utrolig dramatisk og selvfølgelig sørgmodig afslutning på en fuldstændig fantastisk opera. Og jeg synes, vi skal høre afslutningen her, men de må ikke snyde dem for at høre alt det andet, for det er kun ganske få fragmenter, vi har haft lejlighed til at høre her i denne udgave af Kammertonen. Så tag ud på Holmen i København og nyd, ikke mindst under Paolo Carignanis ledelse, Puccinis Madame Butterfly.
Du.